The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
So, where were we?
I think we were deciding whether we were going to destroy each other.
This is the Extra Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 294 for the... I forgot to put the date down for this weekend.
Yep.
I am scary voice on the phone, David T. Cole, and I'm here with very special op, Sarah D. Bunting.
Ready to rock.
And absent yogurt, Tara Ariano.
Well, why did my agent negotiate that series regular gig then?
Hello. Welcome back to Extra Extra Hot Grade for another weekend. Today we're talking about Burn Notice in the context of a forcening. In case you have recently arrived in the bonus listenership, your generous donations entitle you to propose episodes of television that we, your esteemed co-hosts, are forced to watch and discuss, thus the name forcening. It sounds negative, but it isn't always. I don't think it was today. We will get into it. This episode is Season 2, Episode 13, Bad Breaks. It is available on Hulu if you would like to watch. Listener Susanna nominated this one and explained her choice. Thank you, Susanna. But before we hear from her, let us hear from each other with the Chen check-in. Very quickly, should listeners watch this episode of Burn Notice? David T. Cole.
Yes.
Tara.
Yeah, I love a heist.
Yeah, it's a yes from me, for sure. I think I had seen maybe 4 minutes of the show total prior to this. It's like looked inoffensive based on ads that I was seeing for it during other shows I was watching, but it also seemed kind of inessential to me. So I was pleasantly surprised, and I think it's not actually inessential to me.
It is the USA Blue Sky show with the cosmetic font logo.
I have a note about that too. I think it's fine for the show logo, but when they also use it on the credits, it like it makes the show look weirdly cheap and like early, early aughtsy syndicated.
It's definitely a lotion of some sort.
Yes.
I mean, maybe that's why Burn Notice, burn lotion, burn lotion, and that's how they came up with it. But it does not match the concept of the series at all.
No.
No. And let me read from Susanna the rationale for suggesting this episode. Quote, heist episode contained mostly to one location and foiling the heist while trapped as hostages. Funny and smart, using small resources to their fullest, fits into the overall story arc without requiring you to know the full story. It's a pretty good Blue Sky show, but I don't think ever watched by the hosts.
Oh, we watched it.
We watched it.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
What did you guys think of it slash whether I should have watched it?
Well, we watched it up to a certain point. I think we kind of like didn't catch the last couple seasons of it. Maybe just checked in on the finale when it came up, as one was to do back in those days. I think that it is a perfectly cromulent show. Like, it is fun. Most of the episodes have this sort of tone, which is I am a low stakes, low budget MacGyver, but I'm also a spy. And I have this funny sidekick dude who's really good. And like what you see here is basically what you get throughout the series. It doesn't really have a lot of peaks and troughs. Like it's pretty blue skies-y in that way. Blue skies shows are. So if you like this episode, there's a lot more there for you. The central premise of who burned Michael Weston is like kind of beside the point. Like who cares?
Right. Yeah.
the company is the bad guy in the show, I believe. Yeah. It's not really like one person. So if you like this, I think you'll like more, but I don't think you need to like start from the beginning. I think you can just like check out a top 10 right. list and like enjoy it that way.
Yeah, I agree. This show premiered like, I want to say minutes after we moved to America. Mm-hmm. And so there was a lot of shows in that era where it was like, oh my God, we can watch anything we want. Like, definitely. Uh-huh. Like John okay. from Cincinnati, which like was like
kids in a candy store.
Right. John from Cincinnati also started this summer, and it was a similar kind of like, this is a B minus show for sure, but it's here and we're going to watch it because we can. Like, I'm sure someone would have picked it up in Canada too. Yeah. First of all, I think you would be fine picking it up. I think you can wait until after you're done Justified, because vibes wise, right. they're very different shows. And yet I think they scratch the same itch in the viewer.
Yeah.
And I think what you'll like more with this one is it's way more processy. I mean, you can tell even in this episode, like Michael Weston, the protagonist, gets a voiceover where he's explaining all the stuff he does, which is super interesting. And like, it's just a differentiator yeah. where it's like, they did not have to do this to make this show good. And it really makes it so much better and richer and more fun that they did.
And the other thing about the show is that it knows exactly where it is in the yes. spectrum. It doesn't try to overreach.
If yes. you
compare mm-hmm. and contrast this with, and I'm sorry if I'm playing with the timeline here, what we talked about on the Quentin Tarantino Alias, where yeah. they are trying to do a Die Hard episode mm-hmm. and it sort of fell flat because you can't match Die Hard.
Yeah.
It's a $1 billion movie, right? Mm-hmm. You're doing a TV show. Whereas this is, okay, we do a bank heist, but it's got to be within our limits, and they pull it off. And it is a more entertaining hour of television versus the Alias episode, at least to me, yeah. for it.
Yep, I agree.
Yeah, I think that's right. My notes actually said, this makes no sense, but the vibe to me is Point Break plus White Collar plus Justified.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's pretty good.
Yep.
Even though the second two came after this, and White Collar is a much gentler, like less, like more toothless, I would say. I mean, liked White Collar and watched the whole thing, but... Mm-hmm. And interestingly, a lot of the, hey, it's that guys that populate through these Blue Sky shows, like the villain in this one, like the bank robber villain, not the counter blackmail villain.
Yeah.
Definitely was on like multiple episodes of White Collar, Suits, like you name it. I think they just had like a coffee place punch card type of thing. For some of these guys who are all named Scott. Yeah. I mean, you know what I mean.
They all are named Scott.
His name is Mark Shepard. And it does be given like when you every time you see his face, and he does make the rounds of all of these shows. I think he had a recurring role for like ages on Supernatural because he recently had health problems. Did. And like that was the sort of tie in when it was reported. But it doesn't seem like a special enough name for that face. And I can't explain what I mean. And I won't.
Yeah. No, I don't think you have to. Certainly, Susanna's pitch is right on. It's also why I didn't prep much of a plot summary, because she already did it.
Yeah, it's
a nice girl. Speaking of coffee, your next one's on me. You know, the basic premise of the show is Michael Weston, the guy who plays all the Kennedys all the time. Although, actually, he's only ever played two. Shocking. But he's been burned as a spy, and now he's stuck in Miami trying to figure out who burned him. As Dave said, that's the show. Also, Sam Axe in a Hawaiian shirt, which might be why I was thinking Point Break, because there's that Busey character tie-in. You know, Trisha the figure skater from Beverly Hills 90210,
that's
Gabrielle
right.
Anwar also in it, and Sharon Gless as Weston's mom. She wasn't really in this episode that much, but her complete failure to cook or do anything mommy really ties in here.
And you didn't mention it, but Bruce Campbell is Sam Axe.
Yes,
sorry.
Delightful.
Perfect. Like, the role is such a cliche, but because it's him, it like actually registers as a person. Anyway, Weston has a nemesis named Jason Bly. He's played by Alex Carter, not named Scott, but he should be. He looks like one, and he's usually a detective or like a mid-ranking armed force. He was on CSI as a cop for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
They have a blackmail, counter-blackmail dance going at the top of the episode. Bly is harassing Weston to try to get a compromat file back. This spy versus spy setup means that when Weston's mom asks him to help out her neighbor who's getting stalked by an online dating connection, and P.S., the way that this is set up for the viewer is so mid-aughts. Yeah. It is to cry. It somehow means that Weston and Bly are both at the bank where the neighbor works when the stalker turns out to be a bank robber who was using the neighbor to get intel about the bank. Hostages are taken. Weston and Bly will have to work together if Bly can keep it frosty. Spoiler, he can't. And much MacGyver-esque process ensues thanks to Weston's VO. And Tara, I'm so glad that you mentioned his voiceover because those are the clips that I have. Let's start with clip two.
There are a number of different choices when you take over a building by force.
Get up! Move into the conference room.
Do you keep the hostages face down on the floor, or do you move them into a room together?
Let me see your hands! Move! Move! Into the
How do you cut all the lines of communication out?
Give me that cell phone!
And how do you deal with the place's security measures? Whatever your style, hostile takeovers are about one thing, total dominance.
Sans alarm is dead. You don't get into the conference room, you will be too. If we both grab guns, we can level the playing field.
The playing field is covered with hostages. Make a move now and somebody could get shot.
If we don't make a move now, we may not get a chance later.
Just wait, all right?
This was what made me think that I ought to watch the rest of the series. Like, if this had been presented as a canon, I definitely, that would have checked that box for me, that it's like, oh yeah, I'll keep watching this if they're all like this. But it's not as, like, smirky or cutesy as a lot of later Blue Sky series that probably derive directly from it. I'm thinking of White Collar, but also Leverage, which technically was on another network, but is, like, honorary Blue Sky.
Yes.
I would say. Mm-hmm. 99% of the episodes slash Weston's Bondian hypercompetence is not credible on paper, but I think Jeffrey Donovan really sells it, even though the Boston is like constant with that one. I mean, I kind of love it.
Yeah, I'll also say part to mention Die Hard again. Part of what makes the show good is that he's not, like you said, it's not smirky, and it's not like he's very charming and arch at times. But you definitely get, especially in that clip, like, this is serious. He's treating it seriously. He's not acting like this is beneath his station to deal with. Like, he doesn't have it all in the bag. He has to be paying attention and making calculations based on what he knows, but also be able to improvise because he doesn't know, like, how crazy these guys are, and that he's not invulnerable. And that also makes the show better.
And I'm not saying that I picked up any tips from the episode as a homeowner, but I'm not saying I didn't. Clip three.
Cutting through a wall with scissors isn't as hard as it sounds. Start at an electrical socket and saw through the hard surface of the drywall, and the lower layers are a lot easier.
Roger that, Bob Vila.
Also, a note on the guy who is cutting through the wall with scissors. That's Bryce Beckham, formerly Wesley from Mr. Belvedere, all grown up as an adult in this episode.
Oh my God,
randomly.
I didn't spot that. Mm-hmm. Oh. Well, fortunately, no one's nuts were taken hostage by anyone sitting on them, as far as I could tell.
I just imagine a guy sitting his own testicles and another guy standing over him with a pistol. Don't you move.
But.
Oh. The testicles are sort of shifting a little bit, getting antsy.
Edging towards the edge of the chair. I found this really enjoyable. And I think that Susanna really knows us very well. I mean, you know, spoiler, everything turns out okay. All the hostages get out eventually, thanks to a bunch of field medic MacGyverosity.
Yep.
The getaway armored truck blows up real good, just in time for Miami PD to come and wrap things up. Weston and Bly call a truce. We get a little bit more intel about the burner that Weston is looking for. And then it was on to the next thing. So, yeah, this would definitely be a, like, background while I'm cleaning or doing something else show for sure. And I'm glad that I finally interacted with it.
Yeah, there's a shelf life for this type of show, because it is so evenly produced and written, and the mystery never really gets super mysterious. We're not talking X-Files type of stuff. So, you know, after a few seasons, you're like, well, this is just like the same thing all the time, which is sometimes is what you want. But like, you don't, I could just rewatch season one rather than tune in for season seven type of show. So that's why we fell off of it. But it's not like because it got super terrible. It just didn't evolve
Yes.
By the nature of its DNA, right? Mm-hmm. But for this episode, the other thing about Die Hard comparisons is that it's like kind of stupid in the same ways. You know, like mm-hmm. John McClane finds a bunch of C4, he sticks it on an office chair, he tapes it up, throws it in an elevator shaft, and it's a giant bomb. Like, I don't think that's the way it works. But in this episode, like, Michael Weston is going like a video game from room to room and setting like traps as he's pretending to be the doctor taking care of all the hostages. Mm-hmm. And he'll like stick a match inside of a nail gun. So when the nail gun is used, it explodes or something like that. And then like, while somebody is distracted, he sticks a freezing agent into somebody's silencer barrel. So when the first time it goes off, it explodes and stuff like mm-hmm. that. Like, all the sabotage mechanisms are ridiculous in that MacGyver mm-hmm. kind of way. And it works in the context of the show. Like, it seems stupid, but also very at peace with the universe it is inhabiting, which sometimes totally. You do something like this and it feels like you got a normal universe and then you're applying fanciful things inside of it that feel like an outsider looking in. But for some reason, everything in Burn Notice, even though it's supposed to be about spies doing sneaky work and stuff like that, there's these stupid things that constantly happen in the show that feel very much right. Mm-hmm. And that's why the show is sort of like, tonally, they nailed it from the start and they just never gave up. And then it is solid throughout.
Yeah. Maybe Home Alone is another good comp. You know, actually, you're right. That's like all of these properties, Home Alone, Burn Notice, Die Hard, they set up the universe and they let the viewer know this is how things work in this universe, even if it's like sort of not whimsical, but fanciful, like Dave said. That, like, that's not how it works with a bomb chair in an elevator shaft. Like, that they're not gonna not be paying attention to Weston this consistently, right? That he can just like Pac-Man all around this open plan office. But because the writing and the universe of the show have kind of primed you to trust what it's doing within its own world, then it works. Then you do trust it and it pays off your trust, I would say.
Like, in the macro sense, the show is also kind of stupid in the same way you're talking about, like, you know, the Pac-Man in the bank. But like, if the people that burned Michael Weston would just have a better life if they killed Michael Weston, they know where he is.
Yeah.
Yes. He's in Miami. They have unlimited resources. He has mm-hmm. unlimited resources. That's mm-hmm. the whole point of the show. It's, you know, big cat, small mouse sort of game mm-hmm. all the time. But they don't, because otherwise he's dead in episode one and the show's over. But it's that sort of thing, right? You have to check certain things at the door before you go into the Burn Notice show. And then once you do, then you realize the rules of the universe, which are displayed every week on a macro level. And in this episode, very well on the micro level.
Yeah. You also, it has such a small permanent cast. It really just is Michael, Fiona, Sam, and then his mother, Michael's mother, Madeline, the Sharon Glass character. And the other thing that you see so economically in this episode is like what each of those characters' functions is. Like, Madeline brings mm-hmm. the case, Fiona sets the bomb, Sam has to be charming and like deceptive and stuff. And it's like, someone really put a huge amount of thought into like, how do we make this idea with the smallest number of people that we can, and then just guest stars mm-hmm. the rest of the time. And like, that is sort of impressive too, as like a math problem. But yeah, this is such a great episode and a great example of what makes this show so fun.
You know what else is fun? Says people. The theme to Ask EHG, which you're listening to right now, which means it is time for a segment called Ask EHG. All right, let's get into it. And by getting into it, that means we have to deal with last week's Ask EHG, where we turn the tables and ask you, the listeners, the question to answer. Tara.
This question came from Bezor Laura, who wrote, "Somehow I wound up listening to the EHG episode where the Blackadder finale gets inducted into the canon. It's mentioned that some of you didn't like it when you were younger and first watched it, but now love and appreciate it. Is there another TV episode that you can think of that you initially disliked but grew to see the significance of it as you got older? Just a few runners up because people kind of went long with their explanations, which is great. That's not a knock. I appreciate you explaining your thought process. Sean McPhee wrote, Breaking Bad's fly. I was sick, alone, and binging my first watch of Breaking Bad seasons 1 through 4 between Christmas and New Year's. I mean, that does sound sick, frankly. I had a limited number of hours of vacation / waking hours left. I got so mad at this bullshit episode for not furthering the plot. I appreciated better when I wasn't trying to binge the show. Understandable. Elon picked Darmok from Star Trek The Next Generation. First saw it in 90 or so when we were still adjusting to a post-Roddenberry world of Trek. Seemed pretty dopey at the time when we all wanted more Yesterday's Enterprise and Best of Both Worlds Star Navy action. We got broken telephone metaphor theater. Most conspicuously, it felt very self-conscious about being a metaphor episode, but in retrospect, I learned to appreciate later season TNG as its own thing, less precious about tone, but more precious about theme. This is an episode that I referenced yesterday in our house. Like, it's
wow.
It's a good one. Leslie wrote, the Waffles episode of Teen Titans Go. There was a period of time when my son would say waffles a lot. It was super fucking annoying, and I hated that show as a result. But then I started watching the show with him and realized how good it actually is, and the Waffles episode is really funny. It goes from absurd to annoying and back to absurd again. Waffles! Then there was a waffles emoji. But our winner this week, Justice Flux. As a dumbass kid, I never really appreciated Homer's Enemy, also known as the Frank Grimes episode of The Simpsons. It may not have been the flashiest, but of all the episodes of the show's first 12 seasons, that's in all caps, I stopped watching weekly in 2002, it was one of the cleverest episodes. Definitely controversial at the time, and I think now, I believe, is generally recognized as a weird classic of this series, especially the later era. Excellent choice. I'm partly picking you because I agree. Thank you, Justice Flux. Get your sticker.
All right. Yeah. DM me on Discord with your mailing address or a mailing address, and I will send it there. All right. Let's get to this week's questions for us. First one from EC Fell. If all of you as a podcast team or with your actual families were going on Family Feud, what vaguely ethnic or color coordinated outfits would your team wear? Tara.
As a podcast family, obviously, we would have to wear Through Methods Valued Guest t-shirts. This is not debatable. I feel like this is obvious. As for my actual family, this is my true answer. I would never risk my relationship with my real family by doing a game show with them. They do not need to see me like that. It's bad enough that they see me playing just board games at home, and some of them, my mother, don't like to play with me anymore because she doesn't pay attention. She forgets the rules. She misses her turn. And I think she finds it stressful to play with me.
I forgot. It's been a long time since we've done anything like that with your parents. Obviously, we live a long time away. But yeah, wow. A flood of memories just came back.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's not. You two are not good.
We are not.
Partners.
We're not compatible game players.
No.
We just watched the Taskmaster on the main episodes, Taskmaster NZ season 2, episode 2. I am David Correos. I am like me on the set of Family Feud with my mother giving a bad answer. I would be him on the ground just screaming.
It's more like your mother is approaching family game night as a time for bonding and fellowship. And you're like, hack the bone.
That's
hack
right.
The bone.
That's exactly right. I am hack the bone. Sarah.
Yeah, that's my poor in-laws whenever they're like, but the, you know, the fun of it is the game itself. And my brother and I are like, the fun of it is to destroy you. And they're like, oh, my God. Like, after 20 years, they're still not used to how we get, especially against each other.
Mm-hmm.
All this by way of saying that I don't think it's a good idea for us to go on Family Feud either. But if we did, we would all wear various T-shirts advertising the made up shows from Weird Al Yankovic's movie UHF.
Nice.
So whoever is head of household is Spatula City, and then Wheel of Fish, Conan the Librarian, which is probably me, and so on down the line. As a podcast team, though, I had the same answer, valued guest tees. Dave.
Yeah, I can't do better than that. Our Cole family unit, you know, if we go back in time when they're all still with us, I think, I don't know, God bless my father, but he had... had a problem where he thought that if he found something cheap that he could buy and use, even though it was terrible, he would still do it. Mm-hmm. You know, that is a trait shared by thrifty gentlemen across the universe.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things he glommed onto in his 50s was the nightshirt. Nightshirt, I don't know if it does it justice, but it's somewhere between a nightshirt and like casual wear in the Middle East. Like, you know what I mean? Like, is that
or, like a jalaba?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Except he obviously got them from some closure store all the time because they had the worst patterns on them. So if you're imagining like, say, a pure color, pure white one, no, it would be like Tabasco bottles, except not really Tabasco, just like hot sauce bottles on one. And the other one would be like flowers with fighter jets, like just stuff nobody else wanted that would be at whatever discount store he was buying. So I feel like as a tribute to John Cole, we would all be wearing these nightshirts on Family Feud.
I was wondering where this was going. But I was like, you're all going to be wearing lockers? Because when I knew him, he scored some sweet ass shit.
Oh, yeah, he did.
Oh, yeah. My dad was a really good man. I said, my dad had a higher batting average than usual for people that would do things like go to all the weekend
garage sales
and thrift shops.
He's like, I got a pew. Like,
you got four pews. They're still in the family.
Yeah, I remember them. They're pretty comfy, actually.
Yeah.
Part of it is he had a lot of connections from when he was still a police officer. Mm-hmm. So people would be like, hey, I'm selling this. You know, do you want first dibs? That's where the pews came from, because they came from the Holy Rosary Church in Thorold, Ontario. But on the flip side, when it came to retail shopping, which is where this came from, there's a lot of garbage like this.
I hate to disagree with your police work there, Lou, but your sister made a lot of those nightshirts, as I recall. And I think the Tabasco one. He may have bought ones that were bad at first and then she remade them. But the Tabasco bottle one is definitely a Lori special.
Okay. Well, wherever they came from, they were definitely the John Cole sort of uniform throughout his 50s and 60s.
Yep.
So we'll pay tribute to him by going on terrible Tabasco nightshirts. All right. Next question comes from Aaron. I only listen to podcasts at 1.5 or higher speed, and it sounds like everyone's in slow motion if I accidentally have it at regular speed. What TV show would be vastly improved if it was set at 1.5 speed, or conversely, what show should be slowed down? Sarah, do you have answers?
I have an answer. It's the same show for both. For all mankind, hear me out. Cranking it up to 1.5 speed makes all the self-important dialogue sound a little bit more bubbly and fun. And that show does a lot of characters staring morosely into the middle distance / CGI flashback to Mars. Shit that we don't need reminding about. So every time Dan and I started a new episode, we were like, 57 minutes, fuck's sake, but we could bring that in at 44. Great. But then also, you could slow down some of the more risible action sequences to 0.75 and enjoy the utter lack of scientific, physical, and narrative credibility at leisure. Just a reminder, they strapped a pregnant lady to a restaurant air conditioning unit with a bunch of fucking bungee cords and shot her into suborbit. Let's really marinate in that experience.
She's fine.
Yeah. Honorable mention to some of Justified's shootout scenes for the slowdown one, because sometimes I'm really not sure how they did a certain thing, just that I'm like stressed out and interested. So let's slow this down too. Dave.
All right. First of all, I'm going to start off with a pro tip, which is don't put ketchup on the steak in front of the chef. So don't tell podcast creators that you listen to their podcast at 1.5 speed. It's a little insulting.
If salt isn't on the table, don't ask for it. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, like I edit this podcast. I go in and if I think there is a gap that's too long, I will artificially close that gap. Or if a joke is better with a longer gap, I will make that joke better by making that gap a little bit longer. So it is crafted. And when you listen to it, it doesn't matter. Anyways, you're making me cry. Okay. For a show that would be better at a different speed, 1.5 speed, I'm going to go with Everybody Loves Raymond for two reasons. One, anything with Brad Garrett. So his voice is a little kind of normal now. But also you would get the bra.
Just a side note about him. There was a headline today on Decider that Ray Romano had recently rewatched the entire season and ranked the episodes. So Ray Romano angling for a job at Vulture, I guess. Jeez. What a weird thing to do. Mm.
What is with Brad Garrett's commercial work as a mob boss?
Yeah, I don't
know. For Papa John's. And I'm pretty sure there's one commercial where he kind of just comes out and says he killed somebody, which is a weird thing for a national pizzeria chain to glom onto.
I thought it was Jersey Mike's.
It is. Yeah, it's sandwiches. It's Jersey Mike's. Sarah's
oh,
right.
Oh, that's right. Thank you.
And I don't know. I feel like when I'm considering which sandwich chain should get my business, I want the one that's going to go hard enough to kill people in pursuit of it. Okay.
Okay.
Maybe
right.
That's just me.
Eye of the tiger. Got it.
In answer to this question, shows that would benefit from being at 1.5 or higher speed. Lovers and Liars is the first one that came to mind only because it's on right now. This is formerly known as F Girl Island. It would apply equally to any reality dating show. Love is Blind, The Ultimatum, The Bachelor, all of those would be fine at 1.5. I'm going to say up to 5x speed is probably fine. There's a lot of filler in those things. Mm-hmm. Slow down, and I know this from experience trying to take notes for it, to review it. Girls 5 Eva, holy shit, there's a lot of jokes. It really makes it hard to try to take notes. For critical purposes, it goes real fast. So I love the speed of it. As a viewer, as a critic, could have gotten a little bit of space there.
All right. Next question from Hayden Haymaker. Do you have a mostly forgotten piece of TV-related or pop culture gossip that has stuck with you years later? I will go first. The one that I could think of is that some America's Next Top Model contestant was asked to take an IQ test and it came back in the mildly impaired or delayed range. And that stuck with me ever since.
I almost picked that, but I didn't. I instead went with, this was at least 10 years ago or more. Dave Foley went on Never Not Funny and he told the story of his child support issues with a lot of candor. That was like, kind of upsetting. I don't know if you can call it gossip if he told it on himself, but he was like, I owe so much, I can't go back to Canada because he'll get arrested. And I think he must have sorted it out because he was on a recent episode of Fargo, and I know they shoot that in Alberta. So presumably, either he was smuggled in on a fake passport or they figured it out. But that's one that if you want to Google it, there's probably some trace evidence of it still somewhere. Yikes. Sarah.
You know the character in Valley of the Dolls, Tony Poehler? He has, I think, Huntington's chorea. His management team keeps it a secret from everyone, including, I think, his wife, Jennifer, in the book. I haven't read it or seen the movie since high school. Anyway, in the aughts, there was a rumor going around to the effect that Ms. Katie Holmes had a similar or parallel intellectual delay of some sort, and her parents went everywhere with her, a la Tony Poehler, and tried to protect this secret from getting out. And this all coincided with the whole Tom Cruise whirlwind romance, which made each of those stories slightly more credible and comprehensible to each other.
Right.
I didn't not believe it at the time. I don't believe it now, but this just mid-century nature of that and just trying to keep that sort of secret for that long has always stayed with me as like very out of time and weird in a way that totally lined up with like Scientology shit. Don't sue me.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Triple D F42. And they haven't come and explained their name yet. I'm still waiting for the explanation exactly what it means. Until then, we have this question. If you were the head of Netflix, what three shows would you immediately cancel and what previously canceled shows would you replace them with? So take one out, put one in, X3 if you want. Tara.
I mean, I felt bad about this because, you know, first of all, Netflix cancels lots of shows I don't watch without me getting involved at all. And I, you know, you don't want to be the person who's like, the thing you like is bad, although we do that all the time. But like, I don't want to cancel anything that's bringing people joy, but that was the assignment. So here we go. I'm going to say cancel Bridgerton, replace it with more American Vandal. Cancel The Gentlemen, even though we watched all of it. Replace it with more Warrior, please. I know you got the first three seasons, but make a fourth and then a bunch more after that. And cancel The Diplomat, a mid-show that could be good with a few tweaks, and replace it with, you knew this was coming, Glow! Sarah.
Cancel Unlocked, a jail experiment. We already have that show on A&E. It's called 60 Days In, and it's no good there either. Bring back Mindhunter in its place. Cancel Nailed It. I don't really have a problem with Nailed It, but we definitely need to bring back The Final Table, which I feel like nobody watched except me and Andy Dennard at Reality Blurred, but we felt really strongly about it, and we'd like to see more of it. And cancel Stranger Things, because I have tried to care. And I just don't. And apparently it's kind of falling off a cliff. And bring back, you know, Glow. Hello, Dave.
Yeah, shout out to Leslie on the Discord on the who just reacted with the emojis for GLOW on the question. So and everybody just retweeted that. So I think GLOW is probably going to be our number one answer if we put this to a poll. And that's like the only Netflix show that I think I like truly loved. Like there's a lot of Netflix shows I like, but the one that's like, ooh, ouch, that one hurt is GLOW. Mm-hmm. So that would be my answer. But since it was taken by everybody and my other two were Mindhunter, which is a show that I liked a lot, but not loved. And if I had to pick another one that nobody said, I would go probably with Lady Dynamite because it was a Maria Bamford show that was stupid. And I am like the weird like stan for Maria Bamford. I love her stand up and her just her weirdness.
Yeah.
So, you know, it wasn't a stellar show, but it was pretty funny. And, you know, if it came along once every 2 years or so, I'd be a happy man.
And it had that Icelandic cop from Entrapped in it as well as her love interest slash husband.
All right, Jeff is next. For various streaming services, what character avatar do you use for your profile?
For Netflix, I have Helena Bonham Carter's Princess Margaret from The Crown. I am fine with that one. My Peacock avatar is Olivia Benson.
Of course.
And I know all cops are bastards, but whatever, it's what I picked and I can't be bothered to change it. I just realized, thanks to this question, that I could use Gary the Snail from SpongeBob on Paramount Plus. So, Jeff, thank you for leading me to that. And the others, I just have like an initial S with a red background usually, because I don't necessarily need everybody to know that of the available choices, I went with these basic bitch ones. Dave.
Okay, on Disney Plus, I'm R2-D2 because R2-D2 is the ultimate hero of the Star Wars saga.
Yes.
He's the one that makes shit happen. And he knows what he's doing. But for Netflix, it's the fuck pillow from Big Mouth.
That's right. I picked that for you.
Yeah.
Well played.
On Disney Plus, I am The Rock from Jungle Cruise. On Max, I'm Polly Walnuts from The Sopranos. On Netflix, I'm Titus Andromedon from Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. On Paramount Plus, I'm Sam Elliott from whichever Yellowstone prequel show he's on. Don't know, don't care, don't tell me. On Peacock, I am a Jurassic Park T-Rex. On Prime Video, I am Fleabag. And I would love on Stars to be Ron Donald from Party Down, but I don't think they do that. I haven't checked
though. I don't think they do either.
I feel like it's table stakes now. You got to do that, right?
Yeah.
All right, last question for us this week. T'Pickles is back, and T'Pickles is no longer the person that created the Ask EHG theme. They are, in fact, a Vulcan artisan of some sort. T'Pickles.
Of course.
I had Fraser going overnight and got inexplicably anxious at Daphne ordering one large pizza to feed five adults. That's just not enough, says T'Pickles.
No, it's true.
What examples of food anxiety have you experienced thanks to TV? I will go first. This is a really old one. All in the Family taught me always to have a hot pot roast going in the oven in case you have to subdue a home invader with it. I worry that as a vegetarian, I'm susceptible to attack.
There's a Seinfeld episode that revolves around giving people bites of things and them refusing and not saying why. And it culminates in Chef doing something unspeakable to a pie that's getting served to George. And it's that pie. It's stressful. Sarah.
Look, the mention of pizza as a retired delivery gal, when the box is obviously empty and they're just fucking waving it around at an angle, it gives me palps to this day. Like knowing that the cheese is all going to slump to one side and my manager is going to get a call from the customer. Please hold that shit level. I can't breathe. Honestly, though, whenever a big deal is made on TV about food being bad or like gas station sushi, what could go wrong? I'm like, you know what? Thank you, I guess, from the emetophobes in the audience. But guys, can we just not with food poisoning subplots? Thanks.
I just remembered another one. I don't know if it's anxiety as much as it is something I keep in mind all the time now. And it bothered me before Fraser talked about the evils of toast sweat. But since then, with the phrase, the evils of toast sweat, I'm very careful about how I put my toast on a plate. Like I'll put it on the bendy part where it's like convex.
Okay. The curve. Yes. Yeah.
So that there's air underneath so it doesn't create that sweat. Because that's right. You get toast sweat. You're bad. That's why it's like always a crapshoot when you go to a diner or something like that. Like how long has the plate been sitting up there being ready to serve? You can tell by how moist the bottom of your bread is because they don't do that. Like some places used to have like they would bring the bread and like the. Like little wire basket.
The toast rack.
Toast rack. Thank you. Yeah. They used to bring them in the toast rack. That was great. But you don't have that at home. So you have to make do. You want to avoid toast sweat.
You can buy a toast rack.
I could, but I don't want to make, I got too much shit in my kitchen.
You got a birthday coming up. I'll do it.
The junk drawer, you know, everybody's got that kitchen appliance junk drawer. Ours now needs maintenance. Every time you put something in, you have to make sure that nothing is sticking up. So the next time you can open it up because that
they have foldy ones though that extend and you could just like mount it on the side of something and then it comes out like a cartoon. You could put a cartoon like boxing glove on the end and then yeah, it serves two purposes.
You can hang it on the edge of the pantry like where the ladder
at home
is.
The toast goes from the toaster oven almost directly into my mouth. I'm not worried about it.
I don't work for Big Toast Rack. I don't know why I'm like this married to the idea of you having one, but they do exist. I know.
All right. Here is your Ask EHG questions for you listeners to answer on the Discord. It comes from Erica Lemon talking about food. What's a food from a non-cooking TV show that looks so good that you wanted to eat it in real life? Go to our Discord. There is an Ask EHG channel where you're going to put your answers. We'll be back soon with the judgment on that one.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It is time to discover the not quite winners and losers of the week. I have this week's not quite winner. It is American Idol, who is getting Jon Bon Jovi as a guest mentor for the season 22 finale. They got him. He was wanted, dead or alive.
He's got their bad medicine.
Yeah, he's got their bad medicine.
He won't run away.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Stranger Things, yeah. Millie Bobby Brown's future son, daughter, father-in-law.
Boo.
Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Started over my ooh-ah-ooh-ah joke. That's the only reason I did that, to do the ooh-ah-ooh-ah-ooh joke.
Well, do it now. Do it clean.
Now
I'm sorry.
Too bad.
I assume you can fix it.
No.
Step on my Jersey shit. Pay the price, Dave.
And our not quite loser of the week is Netflix safety coordinators, as Candace Cameron Bure claims she almost died during a zipline stunt for Fuller House. I had to ask Tara, is this a really racist one? Apparently she's really homophobic. That's her deal.
Yeah.
All right. Mm-hmm. Well, set aside cosmic karma, you know, maybe the zipline, you know, knew a person that she slighted or something like that. I, too, have almost died from being on a zipline. I don't think we told it on this podcast, but if you listen to Sassy, you know about it. I was in Hawaii with all of Tara's family trying to have a good time going on the zip line on the big island. And there was a sort of dual track, you know, two zip lines at once side by side is how they did it. So there would be a zip line. You start, you go to the bottom. At the bottom, there's two more people waiting to slow you down and catch you and stuff like that. Beside me was Japanese mother, spoke no English, and her youngest daughter. They were beside me. They didn't zip line together. The daughter was beside me. The mother had already gone down. And kid just started making all the noise going down the zip line, like just like going crazy. So like both of them got ready for him. Guess who's waiting for Dave to stop Dave at his? None. At the last minute, I realized, oh, nobody's stopping me. I am going 30, 40, 50 miles an hour into a big pole. So at the last moment, I did what I could. I just turned so it wasn't like my flat back. I just slammed to the side so hard. And I came to like a couple seconds later and then went to the hospital and then blah, blah, blah to get x-rays and all this sort of stuff. But I think if I would have hit the back, I might have paralyzed myself. And if I hit the front, I don't know if my face would still be there. So don't go to the zipline adventure in wherever it was on the big island. They are terrible.
Okay. Speaking of things that are terrible / recommendations, I don't know. Netflix is my not quite winner because OJ Made in America is now on the platform and is more widely available. I have been recommending this five-parter for almost a decade now, and I own it because I'm weird. And have a rich, full inner life. But it was kind of semi behind an ESPN Plus paywall that like maybe Disney Plus people could see it, but they probably would never know. It wasn't a 30 for 30 adjacent property that was ever getting re-aired at night on the ESPNs on broadcast TV. So I would recommend it and then be like, I guess, do you want to pay for it? And now if you already have Netflix, you don't have to. It kind of snuck in a few days ago as we're recording this, and I'm thrilled because it's a stunning document about American life, not just OJ. The not quite loser of the week, Quiet on Set, still finding ways to be losers. And this has been quite a topic of conversation in the bestevidence.fyi Slack. Participants are now claiming they did not know that the series was going to be on ID And they think that their stories deserve, quote, a more credible platform, but they don't say what they were actually told or where they thought it was going to be. So I guess they thought it was going to be some HBO shit, and it wasn't. I mean, I don't know. ID's not that bad, but also, why didn't you just ask them directly?
Mm. Yeah.
Anyway, this is, like, of all the charges that you could level at this, this is a really interesting one, because that would really raise some questions about ethics and documentarianism, but I guess it's going to continue to be an unfolding story. Tara.
Yeah, I'll just say about that, from researching how Justin Willman did Magic for Humans when I interviewed him about the new show, which is called The Magic Prank Show, they would get around stuff like that or just sort of hand wave it, not in an unethical way, because once it was revealed what they were actually doing, it would be, you know, clear that they were on a
right
magic show. But they would be like, oh, this is a documentary, or this is for streaming, which could be anything.
Right.
So, it, you know, if you say for streaming, people might just fill in mentally, oh, it's for Netflix or something. And, you know,
right.
I don't know if that's what happened in this case. I'm just saying there's a lot of ways to fudge it.
Well, and it's entirely possible that they didn't know where it was going to be.
That's true, too.
When,
yes.
When these things were being, these like interviews are being collected. But yeah. The other problem is that Double Dare guy, apparently, like, you see one talking head snippet with him in like the first episode, and then mm-hmm. he disappears from the documentary because he says he was bait and switched and he left mm-hmm. the interview. So maybe these people aren't, I mean, they're not new at this. They've done documentaries before. Like, I don't know. Well, yeah. I guess we'll keep hearing about it. Sigh.
Amazingly, we will. This story really has legs. Anyway, mine are related. My not quite winner of the week is Hulu. Recently, we were saying on this very podcast that more platforms need to do holiday specials. And here come two holiday specials, I believe, this year. It's for Family Guy, so it's none of my business. But that's nice news for the people who like Family Guy. And mm-hmm. I hope that it heralds a new era of more platforms and shows extending their brands in this way. And speaking of people who like Family Guy, that number does not include Patrick Warburton's parents. He is a voice on the show. He says they still hate it after 25 years and that his mother tried to get it canceled, even though his salary has helped support her financially. And that's some real troll shit. And God bless Mrs. Warburton, because that's really funny.
How is Mrs. Yeah. Warburton trying to get it canceled? What is her the mechanism there?
I don't know. Wrote a letter, you know,
dear
trying and succeeding.
Mr. President.
Right. I assume that she just, you know, wrote some cranky letters to wherever. I
see. If she wants to come on the podcast, we welcome her point of view.
Hi, this is Kim Reed, and welcome to the most awesome thing I saw on TV last month. This time around, I'll be discussing season 4, episode 13 of The Brady Bunch, titled Love and the Older Man. Shout out to C. Kent on the EHG Discord for suggesting this one, and everyone should feel free to submit suggestions of non-Little House shows and episodes. I can't make any promises, but I will check them out. So we open on Marcia slowly riding her bike down the driveway. Like, she's riding so slowly that she has to do loops on her bike so it doesn't fall over, and I don't know why she's going at a snail's pace, except maybe so there's no need for any dialogue or story before the opening credits finish running. Once she parks her bike, she does a bunch of indicating that she's deliriously happy, like biting her lip and smiling and stretching and spinning in circles. Inside, Carol and Alice are making meatloaf and talking about how Marcia had a dentist appointment. Carol's slicing a giant cartoon-sized beefsteak tomato into the thickest slices, and they're having meatloaf for dinner, so no idea what the tomato slices are for, but it's some business to justify Carol and Alice being in the kitchen when this is clearly a one-person operation. Marcia slowly walks in while scuffing her feet loudly, like did they have microphones on the floor to pick up the scraping sounds? Carol notices that Marcia's being a real weirdo beardo and asks if she's okay, and all Marcia can say is, mm-hmm, and Alice says she'd like some of whatever Marcia got from the dentist, LOL, drugs. Carol wants the report on Marcia's teeth, and Marcia says the regular dentist was on vacation in Europe. Why did we need to know he's in Europe? Anyway, Marcia saw, as she puts it, Dr. Stanley Vogel. Like, is Stanley the least romantic name they could have used? No offense to any Stanleys out there, but you know what I mean. Marcia says the new dentist has dark hair, dreamy eyes, groovy bell bottoms, and he plays rock music in the office. I don't think I want anyone who wears groovy anything looking at my teeth. I like my dentist conservative in appearance. Marcia says the dentist liked her teeth and she gets to go back for a filling on Thursday. Carol is like, oh, Lord. And Alice is like, what the heck? And Marcia sails off. And then Carol and Alice do an impression of love-struck Marcia that is actually pretty funny. I bet Ambie Davis and Florence Henderson were a hoot backstage. So now the three Brady girls are in their room and Marcia's staring at her teeth in the mirror. And Jan is reading a magazine called Teen Time Romance, which would be a great band name, but I can't decide if it should be like Riot Girl Punk or All-Girl K-Pop Band. Anyway, Jan reads an article about how to tell if you're an old maid at 19, which, yikes. The article says that a girl can only have a successful marriage if she marries a man who is 10 to 12 years older than she is. What in the grooming pedophile is this article about? I know times were different and all, but they weren't that different. Marcia's all, this article makes a lot of sense, instead of what she should be saying, which is, the author of this article should be prosecuted. Jan wonders where you find older men. Everywhere? Marcia moons some more about how Dr. Vogel would be perfect, because he's like 27. And Jan agrees according to the terms of the article. Marcia wonders how to get him to notice her and not just her teeth. I don't know, age 10 years? Downstairs, Mike walks in wearing white pants and a navy blazer, like was he on a sailing expedition? Carol and Mike hug, and Carol reminds Mike he has a dentist appointment tomorrow. Like, are the Bradys single-handedly keeping the dentist in business or what? Anyway, she fills him in on Marcia's crush, and they giggle about old Dr. Stanley Dreamboat Vogel. The next day, Mike's at the dentist, and I, for one, cannot wait to get a load of this hunk. He's fine, I guess. He's a little like Warren Beatty, but if he was on clearance and you also have a coupon. Mike spills the beans that Marcia thinks the dentist is groovy, and the dentist asks if Marcia ever babysits, because he and his wife would like to go out. Marcia, you didn't check for a ring? Maybe he doesn't wear one while he dentists. Back home, Greg tells Marcia that one of his buddies wants to take her out, and Marcia reluctantly agrees, but says the guy's immature. You know, because she only dates married dads now. Mike comes home and shows off his shiny teeth, and then he tells Carol and Alice that Dr. Vogel is the best, but he's also married with kids. And he wants Marcia to babysit. Carol thinks that sounds great. He tells Mike to go upstairs and ask Marcia. This seems like a lot of middlemen for this transaction. Can't Dr. Vogel just call Marcia directly? Well, then that would ruin the whole premise. So then Mike asks Marcia if she's free on Friday, but of course she has that date with Greg's dopey friend. Marcia wants to know why he's asking, and all Mike says is Dr. Vogel wanted to know if she was free. Ugh, sitcoms are so dumb. As if he wouldn't mention babysitting right then. So of course dumb Marcia thinks the dentist wants to date her. She wonders why he went through her father, and Jan reminds her that in, quote, olden times, the man would get permission from the dad before dating the daughter. Jeez Louise, how they think a dentist can be both groovy and also beholden to the customs of the Victorian era. Anyway, all the girls are thrilled with this turn of events, especially Marcia. So the next day, Marcia walks outside in a pastel blue ensemble consisting of a turtleneck sweater, a structured jacket, and a very short skirt. It's cute as hell, but riding her bike is going to be a challenge. So then Marcia's at the dentist sitting completely upright, like did they not have reclining chairs in this era? Dr. Vogel finishes drilling and Marcia rinses and then says, I love the taste of your mouthwash, all sexy-like, and I said out loud, ew! Dr. Vogel asks if her dad mentioned Friday night, and Marcia says she sort of has a date with, quote, a youth at school. Dr. Vogel says he has tickets for the ballet, and Marcia loves the ballet. She offers to break her date and keeps talking while the dentist has his instruments in her mouth, and shouldn't there be a hygienist or something in the room, or is that like a modern invention? Dr. Vogel finally agrees and says he'll pick Marcia up at her house at 7. And then Marcia gives a big sigh and says out loud, wow, like they're the only people in the room, so how did he not notice that? Marcia rides her bike home and calls her brother, quote, children with, quote, juvenile hobbies, which, where is the lie? And then she tells Greg that she's breaking her date with his buddy. Marcia goes inside and asks Carol if her plans for Friday are cool. Of course, Carol thinks she's talking about babysitting, so she says it'll be good experience and it's okay if Marcia runs late. Marcia's blown away that her mom is allowing this, which should maybe be a sign that it's not okay. Marcia runs upstairs to tell Jan, who is also surprised that Carol's fine with it, but also threw up for Marcia. And Marcia realizes a first date could lead to more dates and then going steady and then marriage. So then Marcia has this daydream where she'd be Mrs. Marcia Dentist, which is funny, but also dumb. And then she has the daydream where she's marrying her dentist and she's wearing a wedding gown and he's wearing his dental smock or scrubs or whatever you call them. And the officiant works lots of teeth jokes into the vows. And then he pronounces them wife and dentist. And then instead of kissing, Dr. Vogel examines Marcia's teeth. And this is a very specific kink that Marcia has going here, but I'm not mad about it. Later, it's dinner time, which sends Marcia into another daydream. Like, have they had Marcia tested for something? Because who has this many daydreams? Then again, this was before cell phones, when we just had to sit around with our thoughts. So Marcia daydreams that, okay, hold the fucking phone here, because this is weird. In the daydream, Bobby and Cindy walk into the kitchen where Marcia's preparing dinner. And Bobby's wearing like a velvet short suit and a hat, and he's talking with a terrible British accent. And Cindy's wearing her full Shirley Temple gear with her hair done up in curls. And Marcia's their mom in this dream. And then Alice flits in wearing a French maid getup with a feather duster. And her skirt is about as short as Marcia's usually are. And Ann B. Davis has quite a set of gams, but I've never seen this much of them before. Like, even if the Bradys went to the beach, Alice would have, like, a comically large bathing costume from the early 1900s or something. And Alice is talking with a French accent? So before this dream scenario, just to make sure I've got it straight, Marcia married Dr. Dentist and then either adopted or cloned her own brother and sister. And everyone in the house has a different accent, but it's also the same house she lives in now. Like, some parts of this are out of pocket, like Alice in the costume. But then others are sadly mundane, like they're still in the same house. And it leads me to believe that they didn't feel like building a set or hiring other actors for this dumb storyline. And also, this Alice probably fucks. But you do have to wonder how they didn't all sit down at the table read and get to this scene and go, what the ham sandwich is going on here? And then Mike comes home from work, and Carol greets him with a kiss, and this throws Marcia into another daydream. Like, seriously, she needs to be checked out, and I'm not talking about her teeth. In this daydream, Dr. Dentist comes home from work and sits down to relax in a dental chair, and the camera angle's one we've never seen on this show. Like, the camera must be above the doorway to the kitchen, looking into the living room. But I guess it was to hide the dental chair until he actually sat in it. Like, that was such a great gag. And Marcia gives him a drink and tells him to rinse, and also the theme from Romeo and Juliet is playing. Y'all, this shit is weird. So some other day, Jan gets off the phone and she grabs Marcia and pretends that Jan has a friend who's thinking about dating a married man. Marcia's appalled, and Jan keeps adding information until it's obvious that she knows that Dr. Dentist is married. And finally, she just tells Marcia what she found out, and Marcia is crestfallen. Some other day, or maybe the same day, but Marcia changed clothes, Marcia goes to Alice for advice. This family loves a fucking hypothetical instead of just stating the actual problem. So Marcia asks what Alice would do if she found out her boyfriend Sam had been married this whole time. Alice panics so much that she grabs Marcia and she calls her Marsh, which made me laugh. And Marcia says it's just a hypothetical. Alice says she'd put a stop to the romance immediately. Marcia wonders if she should write a letter. Can you imagine Dr. Dentist's face if he got a letter from Marcia? Luckily, Alice tells her to do it in person. So Marcia barges into Dr. Dentist's office and says she has to see him right away. Dr. Dentist thinks her filling fell out because what is this show if not a giant misunderstanding factory? Marcia says she couldn't wait any longer and they can't go on seeing each other, even though they haven't yet had their first date. At the mention of a date, Dr. Dentist seems to figure everything out and he plays along and lets Marcia break up with him, which is kind of him, but also maybe clear up the misunderstanding so people don't think you're a perv and an adulterer. Luckily, Marcia promises not to tell anyone about this and promises to be back to have her teeth cleaned. When she gets home, Marcia asks Greg if his friend still needs a date. She says she's going to call him right now. So it's finally Friday night, and Mike and Carol and Jan see Greg and Marcia off. Mike and Carol wonder why Marcia changed her mind about babysitting for Dr. Dentist, and Jan is dying to spill the beans. But then she says she better not, and she runs off. You must believe I would be chasing her up the stairs to find out what she knew, but Mike and Carol just shrug and go back to drinking their evening coffee while sitting in chairs facing the same direction with no TV in sight. And that's the most awesome thing I saw on TV last month.
We welcome in our grandpas. Hello, grandpas. There's a bunch of show behind you that you haven't heard. All you need to do is step up that pledge to our new club $5 level, and you will get all of that, plus dozens of giant episodes before this one. Extra credit for this week is Now You Know Your ABC TVs. This is a repeat performance of a concept we did about 200 years ago. The challenge is this: bring a notable TV item for each letter of the alphabet. You'll present it as A is for, etc., etc. with a quick editorial bit if you need to explain your choice. And as a bonus, after Z, we will all get to pick a non-alpha character to deal with. Could be emoji, could be a number, could be something in Cyrillic. I don't know. None of my business. So shall we get into it? Tara, start us off with A.
A is for Acapulco, an Apple TV Plus sitcom I got out of reviewing for season 3 because I only noticed I'd been assigned it when I definitely did not have time to watch 30 episodes. Goodbye, Acapulco. I will probably never watch you. Sarah.
A is for The Amateur's Guide to Love, a game show hosted by Gene Rayburn that lasted 3 months in 1972 and sounds almost unbelievably cringe even for Rayburn 70s product. Dave.
I did a thematic list. These are all alphabet choices for important inanimate objects on The Simpsons. So A is for...
Dad, please, for the last time, I beg you, don't lower yourself to the level of the mob.
Lisa, maybe if I'm part of that mob, I can help steer it in wise directions. Now, where's my giant foam cowboy hat and air horn?
A is for air horn. B.
B is for business, 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 business. Thank you, Sarah D. Bunting, for this extremely useful shorthand, which we use all the time on our sister podcast Again With This. And thank you also to Melrose Place for inspiring her. Sarah.
You're welcome. B is for
Bush. Sure.
Speaking of air horns, Dave.
Buzz Cola. Oh, 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 the bubbles are burning my tongue. Ow, oh.
B is for Buzz Cola. C.
C is obviously for charisma, uniqueness, nerve, and talent. Sarah.
C is for Carol and Company, a 1990 comedy anthology series and a question mark from Carol Burnett that starred, among others, Peter Krause and Jeremy Piven. No what? Thanks. Dave.
Okay, then. Yes. Vent the stupid gas.
Ah, no, the corn! Paul Newman's gonna have my legs broke.
C is for corn. D.
D is for David Spade, funnier than he gets credit for. Don't at me. Bye-bye. Sarah.
D is for Damon Harriman's hilarious, pathetic, utterly without vanity performance on Justified as Dewey Crow. Dave.
Dental plan.
Lisa needs braces.
D is for dental plan. E.
E is for Elvish, which I assume people speak on Rings of Power, but I will certainly never know. Sarah.
E is for Elaine dancing on Seinfeld. Relatable. Mm-hmm. No further comment. Dave.
It's the first annual Montgomery Burns Award for Outstanding Achievement.
E is for Excellence Award. F.
F is for the frozen yogurt that Milos the janitor stole for Bill McNeil on News Radio. Sarah.
F is for the fourth season of The Wire, one of those properties that is so exquisitely devastating you can never fucking watch it again. Sorry. Dave.
Take this object, but beware, it carries a terrible curse.
Ooh, that's bad.
But it comes with a free frogurt.
That's good.
The frogurt is also cursed.
That's bad.
But you get your choice of topping.
That's good.
The toppings contain potassium benzoate. That's bad.
F is for frogurt.
Two frogurts. Double frogurt.
Yep. Tara, now G.
G is for Gossip Girl, XOXO, Sarah.
G is for Gilligan's Planet, the second cartoon featuring Gilligan's IPs, but this time the 3-hour tour ended in space! Not that anyone cares. Dave!
We take 18 ounces of sizzling ground beef and soak it in rich creamery butter. Then we top it off with bacon, ham, and a fried egg. We call it the Good Morning Burger.
G is for Good Morning Burger. H.
H is for Hollywood, as made famous by BoJack Horseman. Sarah.
H is for Ted Harbert, the ABC jefe who canceled my so-called life. Oh. He may have been right to do so, but I'll still never forgive him. Dave.
Sarah, I need to know where I can get some business hammocks.
Hammocks? My goodness, what an idea.
Why didn't I think of that? Hammocks! Homer, there's four places.
There's the hammock hut. That's on third.
Uh-huh.
There's hammocks or us.
Got
that's
it.
On third, too. You got put your butt there.
Mm-hmm.
That's on third.
Yeah.
Swing low, sweet chariot.
Right.
Matter of fact, they're all in the same complex. It's the hammock complex down on third.
Oh, the hammock district.
H is for hammocks. I.
I is for itchy. Of itchy and scratchy. Sarah.
I is also for It's Gary Shandling Show, which wasn't great, but that theme song is an all-timer.
Oh, yeah.
It's stuck in your head right now.
Yep.
I apologize.
You're right.
Dave.
I is for the itchy and scratchy land map.
Mm-hmm.
Torture land. Explosion land. Searing gas pain land. Unnecessary surgery land.
Mm-hmm. All right. Tara, Jay.
Jay is for Jackass. Underappreciated. Sarah.
J is for Jazz Scene USA. Appreciated exactly the right amount, actually. But in 1963, people didn't know any better. Dave.
Is this a TV show?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, never heard of it. Don't want to know.
No, you don't.
Superintendent Chalmers, I'd like you to meet our new school nurse, Lunch Lady Doris.
Yeah, nice to see you. Seymour, why is that student lying unconscious on the floor?
Well, in many cases, the floor is the best. Oh, look, here comes Lumpy, the school snake. Oh, Lord.
J is for Jagged Metal Crustio. K. We're now at K, Tara.
K is for Katie Keene, CW show gone too soon. Sarah.
K is also for Kate Loves a Mystery, a.k.a. Mrs. Columbo, which starred Kate Mulgrew as Columbo's wife, although they were never seen on one another's shows, and it limped along through 10 months and, count 'em, four title changes in 1979.
Jeez.
Never heard of any of them. R.I.P. Dave.
Give me 700 Krusty Burgers!
K is for Krusty Burgers. L.
L is for Liza Minnelli, an excellent Arrested Development guest star. Sarah.
L is for Lala, the Triton cockatoo who played Fred on Beretta.
Dave.
And with that, a mighty cheer went up from the heroes of Shelbyville. They had banished the awful lemon tree forever because it was haunted. Now let's all celebrate with a cool glass of turnip juice.
L is for lemon tree. M, Tara.
M is for roll, merge. Sarah.
M is for the Morton Downey Jr. show. No. Remember that shit?
Yep.
Dave.
The perfect chance to make my patented space age out of this world moon waffles. Let's see here. Caramels. Waffle batter. Liquid smoke.
Ooh. Waffle runoff.
And then he proceeds to wrap his an abomination of a waffle around a stick of butter, then eat it. That is Homer's moon waffles. M is for moon waffles. N, Tara, N.
N is for Norm. Sarah.
N is for Nova, PBS's science documentary series, which turned 50 this year. Who knew? Now you do. Dave.
It's awful being a kid. No one listens to you.
It's rotten being old. No one listens to you. I'm a white male, age 18 to 49. Everyone listens to me, no matter how dumb my suggestions are.
N is for nuts and gum together at last. O.
O is for Out TV, where Jack McFarland worked for a time on Will and Grace. Sarah.
O is for John Voight's O-Face and Ray Donovan, which Tara screencapped like a decade ago for Previously.tv. I have never forgotten, nor will I ever forgive. Mm-mm. Dave.
This gruesome customer is Extapolapakettle, the god of war.
Awesome! No, Maggie, not Aztec. Olmec. Olmec.
O is for Olmec head. P, Tara, we're now at P.
P is for Paula, and P is also for Pell. Paula Pell, a legend. Sarah.
Have a seat, Caillou, because P is for Pinwheel, the worst children's show ever made. Dave.
There's nothing to eat for breakfast.
You gotta improvise, Lisa. Cloves, Tom Collins mix, frozen pie crust.
Maybe Mom just doesn't realize we miss her. We could go down to the casino and let her know.
Aw, come on, Lisa. There's no reason to... Let's go see Mom.
P is for that pie. All right, we're at Q, Tara.
Q is for a Quinn Martin production. Sarah.
Q is for The Quest, a mid-70s NBC Western starring Kurt Russell and Tim Matheson, which was scheduled opposite Charlie's Angels and went tits up as a result. And I'm a little sad about it, frankly. Yeah. Dave.
Yeah, I love Grimby. Could I have some more bumper stickers, please, dude? All right. The mummy's ready for his mystical journey. Oh, what's happening?
Q is for Quimby stickers. R, Tara.
R is for the Rachel, the hairstyle that had us all in its grip for a time. Yep. Sarah.
R is for the Ricker. Never understood the appeal. Pretty glad nobody really hires that dude anymore. I'm speaking of Rick Schroeder, and now I'm going to stop. Dave.
I wash myself with a rag on a stick.
R is for rag on a stick. S.
S is for Stan. Sarah.
Stan. S is for...
Miss Sarah Bunting. What on earth is she doing here?
Dave.
I don't know where you magic pixies came from, but I like your pixie drink.
S is for syrup only super squishy. T, Tara.
T is for True TV, home of the Impractical Jokers for now. Sarah.
T is for Teen Steam. Gotta let it out. Gotta let it out. Dave.
T is my only unclip choice. It is for the food product Tub with an exclamation point and three B's, a food product we never know what exactly it is, but Homer's dipping potato chips in it. Tub. We're now at you, Tara.
U is for Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, who taught us about outside bones indirectly. Sarah.
U is for Euphoria, Beverly Hills 90210's copyright compliant version of ecstasy. Dave.
I learned at the feet of Blind Willie Witherspoon.
I've been playing jazz for 30 years and I just can't make a go of it. I want you to have my saxophone.
This isn't a saxophone, it's an umbrella.
So I've been playing an umbrella for 30 years? Why didn't anybody tell me?
We all thought it was funny.
U is for umbrella. All right, we're getting towards the end. V.
V is for Velma. Never watched it, but it sure made people mad. Sarah.
V is for Valerie Malone's boobs. Best in the business. Dave.
Good evening there, miss. Here's your giant sub, swimming in vinegar, just the way you like it.
V is for vinegar. W, Tara.
W is for The West Wing, breaker of a generation's brains. Sarah.
W is for Who Will Fight Me? Dave.
And for you, Ned?
I'll have a Shirley... Oh, a virgin. No, make it a children's... Oh, what the heck? You only live once. Give me a... White Wine Spritzer.
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 Spritzer. Spritzer.
W is for White Wine Spritzer. 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 All right, X.
X is for... I hope we're allowing fudging, but it's for Maximum Exposure, a 3-season syndicated show with a lot of very inappropriate videos.
Was
collected.
That Rick Rack Arm?
That's fucking Rick Rack Arm, Sarah.
Oh my God, I want
it.
To revise my entry for R, Rick Rack Arm on Maximum Exposure. Oh
late
God.
Nights, hotel TV at its best. Yeah. I could not remember what this was called, and if you Google something like Clip Show X, you get a lot of very bad results, but I eventually figured it out. Sarah.
Oh my God, amazing. X for me is for the visual representation of strikes and wrong answers on Family Feud. Dave.
Say, I think those x-rays gave me superpowers.
Cut! That was perfect. Let's do it again.
These aren't real x-rays, are they?
Good question. We'll check into that. Okay, x-ray machine to full power and action.
X is for x-ray machine. Why, Tara? Why?
Why? Because Yancey Butler, Witchblade, she's also now police captain on 911, ACAB, but, you know, except for 911, kind of. Sarah.
Yolanda Vega, New York Lottery drawing MC until 2022. She's not dead, but we still miss her. Dave.
Vent radioactive gas. Y-E-S. Sound alertness horn. Y-E-S. Decalcify calcium ducts? Well, give me a Y. Give me a... Hey, all I have to type is Y. Hey, Miss doesn't find me attractive sexually anymore. I just tripled my productivity.
Y is for Homer's Y key. All right, last letter of the alphabet. Z or Z.
Z is for Zoe Kravitz, underrated in Big Little Lies. And if you don't believe it for the rest of the season, you'll get there with the finale. Sarah.
Z is for Zaslav. I will never forgive or forget again. Julia, R.I.P. Dave.
Oh, it was all a dream. Thank goodness I still live in a world of telephones, car batteries, handguns, and many things made of zinc.
Z is for zinc. All right, last item. It is a non-alpha character starting TV thing. Tara.
My non-alpha character is the three in Num Threeers. That's just for you, Ryan, on the Discord, who was sad it did not get included in my Keeping Everything 100 game. Sarah.
That was mine, too.
Ah!
Yay! Dave.
Jeez, we hardly made a dent in that 10-foot hoagie.
Oh, give it a good hope.
You've been eating that thing for a week. I think the mayonnaise is starting to turn.
Two more feet, and I can fit it in the fridge.
Homer, I found this behind the radiator. I really think you should throw it away.
Suggestion noted. Marge, I'd like to be alone with the sandwich for a moment.
Are you going to eat it?
Yes.
All right, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra, Extra Hot Great. Susanna got away with forcing us to watch the bank heist episode of Burn Notice before we answered your burning ass EHG questions like, what shows need to be watched sped up and when did TV give you food anxiety? We celebrated those who weren't quite the best and worst of the week and wrapped it all up with more ABCs of TV. Next up on EHG Prime, it is Dead Boy Detectives. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano.
Oh, I'll just be over here disguising attacks as attempts to help.
And Sarah D. Bunting.
What on earth am I doing here?
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time right here on Extra, Extra Hot Great.
Wesley.
You have no idea who you're dealing with.
Shut your mouth. I've got the money. That's just some voice on the radio.
This is Extra Hot Great Minis. Today's topic is the college try.
Hello, everyone. Today's topic is an extra credit from Andrew Jewell, who says the best laid intentions of new cable channels oft go awry. In 95, the letters TLC, he says, evoked within me the jolly thoughts of a more learned and positivist society, or at least thoughts of waterfalls and red light specials. Now, when he hears TLC, all he can think of is, quote, how my strange addiction to cake boss sex sent me to the ER before I could say yes to the Dress Atlanta. Fair enough. His challenge to the panel is to design a gimmick or theme for a new cable channel with the best of intentions and then look into our crystal balls, to see what type of entertainment sludge our channels might devolve into 20 years from now. Madam Dave, look into the future.
Well, I just want to say that I have a policy about all this rather than, and I've explained it before, maybe on the first iteration of the podcast. But for my entry, I just want to bring up what should be part of Clark's New America as far as cable channels go.
Here we go.
And it's known as the basic cable cat keyboard policy, which is this. If you have a situation like TLC, which started off as the Learning Channel and then de-learning channel themselves in a Kentucky Fried Chicken versus KFC kind of way,
and that you change your programming substantially from the type of programming in which you got your license in the first place, right? Because these channels have to like pitch on content, and that's, and then basically then they abandon that content and everybody does the same sort of thing. That's sort of the MO of all these. So if you do that, that's fine. We can't stop you, TLC, from becoming the learning channel into the little people lifestyles channel or whatever's going on these days. But when you do that, you are beholden to change your name when a cat walks over your keyboard. Whatever that spells out, that's how you have to market yourself as punishment for changing. So TLC can't become TLC anymore. They have to be Kajigabugga. And then that's their punishment. And then they have to try to make a go out of it as the channel Kajigabugga. So that's my cat keyboard policy. And it would be enacted for such choices as Taurus.
Oh, hello. Yes, I have an answer. Mine is called Must See TV. And this is especially timely. It's actually worked out well that we're doing this now rather than when we originally were planning to do it a few weeks ago when Dave's computer broke. Must See TV would start out airing old NBC sitcoms, which, of course, are the only kind that exist anymore. NBC having canceled all of its sitcoms and apparently now going to some kind of plan where they're going to try and just gestate them online only and not on TV. That's where it would start. You would get your Cheers, your Family Ties, your Night Courts, your Friends, Seinfeld, Parks and Recreation, etc. Shows people enjoy. And 20 years from now, it would just devolve into other NBC shows like The Biggest Loser and American Ninja Warrior and America's Got Talent and other reality shows that they don't have to pay anyone residuals for. Sarah.
My idea is the Poppy Fields Movie Channel.
Love it.
Yep.
Currently, Poppy Fields Movies, and for those of you who aren't regular listeners, Poppy Fields Movie is one of those films that even though it's on TV, totally bowlerized and full of commercials, you are still sitting there in front of it with one leg, like in your tights, watching to the end. Examples include Goodfellas, Field of Dreams. And actually, there was a Goodfellas Field of Dreams battle the other night between like IFC and Sundance. I was so
bold. Did Shawshank Redemption come on somewhere else? TNT to break the tie?
That one's like fallen out of the Poppy Fields Mo row lately. I don't get it. But I own it in like five other media, so it's fine. This would consolidate them all into one PFMC. Unfortunately, in 20 years, it will sort of devolve MTV style. It'll be all toothless making of documentaries, re-airings of ill-advised TV versions of the movies like the Diner pilot, like the Ferris Bueller. Is that one, the one with Patrick Dempsey? Anyway, doesn't matter. And the Inside the Poppies studio knockoff talk shows. Yeah. It'll be sad. And the actual movies will never be on.
And another scenario would be that one studio buys that channel and only shows their movies. So you only get a subset of all the good movies.
Yeah. It's like the Universal channel.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. John, take us home.
Okay. I was a little late on time for this one, so this is going to be a little workshoppy. If you want to workshop it with me, by all means, feel free. Mine is the Period Network, where all the original programming has some sort of period element. Oh, so it'd be composed of stuff like It's Gotten Better, I Hear, Turn, you know, Sleepy Hollow has period elements. It could be semi-reality like Vikings, miniseries like John Adams, anything with a period element. But over time, as scripted drama gets too expensive to produce, it will retain its period focus by licensing shows from a certain period. And since budget will be a problem, it will be limited to stuff like mid-90s shitty teen dramas like Dawson's Creek or like the super off-brandiest reality of the late 2000s, which I can't think of good ones, but I know I could mine Tara.
Chains of Love. Oh, that was the early 2000s, but still.
Okay. Well,
I Want to Marry Harry. Yeah. Sure. I actually kind of missed that show anyway.
Mm. Yeah, maybe Fear Factor. That's a little even tie brand for it. But, you know, in 20 years, is anyone going to remember it? Probably not. So the licensing fees won't be high.
Also, they could cut back programming to one day each month.
A week each month. A week each month, I think, is what you meant.
I did mean that. Shit.
They don't know how ladies' bodies work.
Yes, I do. You bring them into the cabbage patch.
No, into the special tent.
You woo them.
Uh-huh.
And then...
I'm uncomfortable.
2 weeks later, there's a baby. Oh, you better believe I'm going to edit that one.
One day a month.
Yeah, jeez.
I think Sarah's I'm uncomfortable should be a drop.
Forget the pressure to overhaul your life. The new year doesn't need a new you. It needs you. Grow Therapy helps you make meaningful change at your pace and on your time. Grow connects you with thousands of independent, licensed therapists across the U.S., offering both virtual and in-person sessions, nights and weekends. There are no subscriptions, no long-term commitments. You just pay per session. Grow accepts over 100 insurance plans, including Medicaid in some states. Sessions average about $21 with insurance, and some pay as little as $0, depending on their plan. Visit growtherapy.com/try now today to get started. That's growtherapy.com/try now. Availability and coverage vary by state and insurance plan.